Ladies and gentlemen, hang on to your hat. Episode 21. I'm Derek Myers, coming at you from Castaway Studios in Collingwood.
I'm Dan, and I'm coming to you from Broome, Western Australia.
Oh, my. The magic of tech.
Go on, Derek. Push a button.
Righto. Oh, yeah.
Bad daddy, you're a naughty boy.
Don't judge me.
These days, fatherhood is everywhere. You can't get away from it. Not that blokes haven't tried. If you're not a father, you've got a father. You're a son of a dad or a daughter of a bloke. But either way, being a dad is no picnic. The fear, the anger, the confusion, and, well, the love, of course. Oh. Derek Myers and Dan Lee, together with their special guests, are here to share the highs and lows, the joys and the agony of being a modern dad. But most of all, to let you know that you're not alone.
There it is.
Oh, Dan, just quickly, before we get on to the magical world of what's going on in Broome, I launched a new podcast. You knew I was going to talk about it. Let's face it. But I'm not publicising it. That's not what I'm here for, because it's private. Right. It's private. It's only for overweight men.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
how are you going to know that over the airwaves? How are you going to determine?
Well, I don't give a shit if anyone isn't.
Right. Okay.
I don't care if they're not. Well, it's only aimed at.
Yeah.
Like if someone says to me, it's like mum's listening to our show. They can listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Won't do any harm.
Well, but, you know, as a dad, it's only a matter of time anyway, really.
What,
you could
fat,
argue.
Get fat.
Yeah. Well, seems like it.
I can't see you getting fat, to be honest, but you know.
I don't know. Well, at least we won't have more kids. I think the more kids you get, the harder it is to get out and, you know, run around. And you have to eat all that bloody food that they eat.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing.
Well, here's the format, just quickly. I've kind of come up with this kind of spontaneously. I climbed a 3-step staircase, and then when I got to the top, and I'm sick of this fucking about to die sound that I've got in the microphone. So I just cracked and I went, I've had this idea for a long time, but I kind of evolved, I mashed a few ideas together. So what I'm doing is this kind of big man support. It's called the Good Paddock. The big man support kind of vibe, like we do with fatherhood, not going in with any great knowledge or judgment.
Yeah.
But each guest every week is going to throw down a new thing a challenge for me to do.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, every day, I want you to have a smoothie in the morning with fucking Wheat Bix in it or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Whatever that people do. Right?
Right.
And they have to do it as well, because somewhat my mate Bob's coming on next week and he's gone, yeah, but couldn't I just torture you with some crazy thing? I said, well, you have to do it too. But I have to do all of them cumulatively. So they've got to be little things. Anyway, that's my adventure. So I'm excited by that. And that's got me through my lonely times while you've been in Broome. So when are you coming back?
I'll be back this week. We're coming back a little bit earlier, so
to the tropics.
I think I've lost a child. Hang on a minute.
I can hear one.
There's one there, but there's another one, I think. Oh, she's got the other one. So we've got a Italian woman, Francesca, who's here, and she's a friend of a friend. She's come over to watch the kids this afternoon and watch them tonight so we can go out for dinner.
Oh, that's living the life. Look at that.
Exactly. What more can you ask for?
How would that be if you were living on a truck and you had 3 kids?
Nice segue.
I went off too early because I do want to talk about today's episode. But I also wouldn't mind touching on last week's, because I've just been listening through.
Dave Mann and this week's episode about the living in the truck was such a great conversation.
Awesome.
And it's kind of mind-boggling what they've achieved to I mean, they literally, they've got a little bit of space at their parents' house on the kind of family property that he talks about, with a couple of sea containers, so they can spread out at certain times, you know. But most of the time, they're traveling up and down the West Coast with all those kids. And I gave you a couple of photos too of the truck.
Yes.
But it's very inspiring because it just shows you that it's possible, and there are definitely upsides to it as well. And weirdly, it makes things more complicated in a lot of ways, but also simpler, much simpler in a lot of ways. So I went in thinking that this sounds like the most stressful thing you could possibly do, but then it also takes away a few stresses as well. So
yeah, no, mate, I was all the way through. I was just, while I was listening to it earlier on, I was just going, I want to do that. Yeah. I know. And I was also, another part of me was going, yeah, but you can't. Yeah, but you can't. You're not fit enough. You're not smart enough. You know, people say, oh, you have to be smart to be a lawyer and to be successful. Bullshit. Yeah. I reckon you've got to be smart to get out there and run the show on the road. I reckon it's brilliant. And on the ocean, that's a whole nother story coming up. But no,
I find all these
no spoilers.
Mates, all these guys up here are very inspiring to me, but they are a little bit superhuman, some of them. So, you know, it's hard to kind of quite, that's inspiring. But they've got a very conscious understanding of whether you agree with it or not. They've got a very conscious kind of engagement with their lives and their families. So,
there was amazing sort of synchronicity in the fact that 2 days ago I recorded episode one of my Fat Boy podcast, and then there was a little bit in last week's where there was a bit of a mention of, you know, like teaching the kids. And my first instinct was like, back up, as in my back was up. And then I went, you know, well, this is what the show's about, diversity and everything. And I went, hang on a minute. But then I remembered, Dan, that it was probably less than 3 days ago that I had exactly the same talk to my kids. The only difference was I wasn't pointing at someone and saying quietly and not insultingly and not embarrassing them. I wasn't pointing at someone saying, that's what happens when you don't think about what you wear, look after yourself. I actually did have that talk with my daughter and my son to some extent, but he's a different breed. I think he's going to be scrawny till he's about 70. But,
well, look, I did my daughter,
and I said, look at me. I said, this is how. So I can't really say that was a bit unfair because I did it, but I had the option, like Seinfeld's dentist, you know, I had the option because I'm in the gang, I can call out the fat. But I wasn't calling it out or judging myself. I was saying, this is the physical result of not really learning to eat properly and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and that's
what I'm getting into
in my own show. But that
it was choice of words, really. And then the thing with a conversation like that that's unedited is that you know things come out the way they come out. But I hope it was understood that my intention with that example of obesity and overweightness was that I was trying to make a point about how it's you know, it shouldn't be that just like we don't have to call obesity healthy and wonderful and
it was obvious
in order to that doesn't therefore mean that we have to persecute people. It's that thing of you know, in order to not persecute, you have to say it's all perfectly fine, and no obese people want to be really overweight. We just don't have to pick on them for it.
Yeah.
Was my point.
I think Richard kind of took
it slightly differently, but
no, but that's fair. Yeah. I mean, if you're not exposed to it, like if you live in Alice Springs.
Yeah.
Your idea of traffic is going to be in Melbourne. It's going to be pretty fucked up, right? You're going to be going, no way, because it looks so random, like Hanoi. For instance, when you were in Hanoi living there and it was just mental, but then you eventually realised there was a system there. And there's also a system for saying the right things, and you know, it's not just a blanket. Like if I just tried to perceive what was happening and I was from somewhere else in conversations about being not insulting and all that, I'd probably go, these fucking freaks, you can't say anything. PC gone mad and all that sort of stuff. Whereas when you're immersed in it, you get ready. There's no way. I thought it was brilliant the way you handle that, and it instantly came across to me as a listener in this case that it was obvious that you were talking about the notion of not persecuting someone doesn't need to suddenly just pile on the acceptance
that everything's
it's healthy for your body,
that it's all great. It's not mutually exclusive. And you know, I think there's a tendency to sort of outrage, and I hope that when people can hear the intention and
I don't think we need to make too many excuses for it. I thought it was pretty good. So, you know, you can't have a show where you're talking to a diversity of dads and then be worried if someone's got a particular opinion or whatever. And
exactly. We just have to hear everyone's opinion and try not to get too, take things too personally, I suppose. Try and put it in the context that it's in. It's interesting. I think it's great that we're getting all these perspectives anyway. Yeah,
for sure.
And it should be a little bit difficult and a little bit complex. So anyway, listen, I better go because, you know, life's bouncing around the backyard in front of me.
Get a picture. Life is bouncing around. That's fantastic.
I was trying to search for a word for rather than chaos.
Yeah, and people get into this. You got to love this story. I was so jealous of life on the mini house, tiny house on the truck.
Yeah, on the truck. Yeah. See, I had a great chat to Dave. All right, man. I'll get a couple more before I come home.
Okay.
And I'll see you then.
Beautiful. All right.
Cheers,
see you. Love to the family.
You too.
G'day, folks. This is Dan. This is Hang On To Your Hat. I'm in Broome still with our Kimberley series of dads. We're trying to make it sound even, you know, more professional every time. The Kimberley series. So if you're not a crocodile hunter, then you have no place in the Kimberley, it seems.
That's right.
No, but and I'm here with Dave Mann, who lives part of the well, you live all over the place. And that's the
point. I guess
point.
So. Yeah, I guess you could say that.
But he's from Margaret River. You're an old Margaret River family.
Yeah. Our family goes way back there.
Yeah. In fact, the road you live on is named after your family.
It is.
I believe. Mann Road, is it?
Mann Street.
Mann Street.
Yeah. So we do go back to sort of when Margaret River began as a town.
Yeah, right.
Our family. But I didn't grow up there as such. I went to school in Perth.
Right.
And we were there on weekends and school holidays. But it wasn't until later in my life that I decided that it was a good place to be.
Yeah, beautiful place. Dave is... a friend of Will's, who I lived with in Broome some time ago, he and his partner Beck and the three kids travel around Australia a lot, and between Margaret River and Broome, Dave's a musician, singer-songwriter, as is Beck, and you guys play all over the place. And important, like the reason I really wanted to get him in here to talk was that these guys have been living in a truck, basically a home on the back of a truck with three kids, or at least for the early part of their lives.
Yeah, they've never known anything different. They weren't born in the truck, but their only home is the truck. Yeah.
And because I get on this podcast and I whine and complain and about how I'm not coping and all that, and everyone says, oh, come on. But I marvel at you guys embarking on such incredible journeys with kids living in close quarters.
Yeah.
So what the fuck was in your head?
Yeah.
Well, you guys, were you doing that before you had kids?
Yeah, we absolutely were. So Beck and I met 11 years ago and very quickly it was one of those whirlwind kind of getting togethers. We got together and, you know, 2 or 3 months later after meeting, we bought a truck together because she had this grand vision of playing. Well, she's into theatre and I was always into music. And we bought a truck and then we drove across the Nullarbor in this truck that together we barely knew each other really. We didn't have any other. We've sold everything we had and bought this cab chassis of a truck, thinking that it was a great idea.
So it didn't have the thing on the back.
It was just a cab and a flat tray.
Right.
It was an old New South Wales railway truck.
Right.
And Beck had this vision of traveling Australia, getting into communities, remote communities, and trying to get some sort of interconnection happening with Indigenous Australians, and using her theatre background as a bit of a vehicle to sort of connect a bit more.
Mm.
She had this longing for it. And what manifested from that dream was a four-wheel drive house truck, because I'm nearly 7 foot tall and I can't fit in any of the buses that we looked at.
Yeah.
And we wanted it to be four-wheel drive so we could go to pretty remote places.
Yeah.
And the other criteria was that it had to be like some sort of environmental low impact thing, like so running on waste vegetable oil.
Wow.
And so once I sort of started looking into how to make a truck run on waste vegetable oil, I whittled it down to the truck that we have in terms of whether it was available, you know, whether it was suitable to run on waste vegetable oil.
Yeah.
And
are you guys still doing that?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no way we could afford to run it on a musician's income.
No, because people drop off a bit, like because it's a bit of work.
It is a bit of work. And I should have given up many years ago, but because of our low income, I had to make it work, because trying to make that thing run on diesel, we just can't afford.
Yeah.
Like we'd have to do double the amount of gigs to pay just for the fuel.
Yeah. So now you got to make friends with a lot of fish and chip shops.
Well, it just so happens that all the places we play, they also have restaurants mostly.
Oh, of course.
And so we play a gig and we pump their oil and we get paid for the gig. So it kind of works out perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so once you've got it all down, you know what you're doing and you've got it down to a
system. I've got it down to a fine art now, but that's after 10 years of making a lot of mistakes. Basically, I've got a great little system now. It's a no-brainer. I hardly spend any time fixing the engine or fixing all the components that make it work on veggie oil.
Yeah.
And it's a really good little system now. And we've got our drop-off points, or pick-up points, I should say, between Margaret River and here in the Kimberley. And I might also say, too, that we don't really go around Australia. We have done. Once,
yeah, right.
But it's pretty much Margaret River to the Kimberley and back each year.
West Coast, there's loads of people are doing that up here. Like Kamali does that, and there seems to be a Margaret River broom.
There is
kind of fast track. Or something.
I think a lot of people down that way.
Yeah.
Exit.
Oh, and Richard, who was on the other day, of course, is living in Margaret River now too. And So you had the kids came after. Oh, that makes a bit more sense, because I was thinking these guys have had three kids and gone, fuck it, we'll stick them all in a truck. And I thought, what? How could you do that?
Yeah,
like,
that's madness.
So it was sort of like the boiling frog. You gradually found yourself doing it.
Well, it was pretty interesting after, you know, only knowing Beck for 2 or 3 months, and we're trying to decide which truck to buy. Yeah. You know, do we get a dual cab? Are we going to have kids? You know, so having this discussion, you know, very early in a relationship was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But
all based on – all because you need information to buy a truck.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, do we get a dual cab or do we get a single cab? Is it just going to be us, or are we going to make a family one day? Because we only want to – you don't want to buy a truck twice, you know. So we decided that, yes, we would like to have kids one day into the future, and Gracie came – a lot earlier than we'd planned to have kids.
All the blokes in the Kimberley series have just about been the same. These fast relationship, like, crash together.
So Gracie came a year. No, when was it? We got married, and I think we must have conceived Gracie that night or a couple of nights afterwards.
Wow.
And so, you know, 9 months later we had a truck and a baby.
But how long had you been together at that stage?
Oh,
few months.
Maybe 18 months.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's maybe probably the same for us. Yeah.
But at this stage, the truck was very basic. It's been such an evolution building that truck. You know, it started off, it's taken us basically 7 or 8 years to get it to this point where it is now.
It's a beautiful truck for people listening. It's got all the interiors, wooden benches and bunks, and it's the muraled on the outside. It's a beautiful piece of work. It's a bit of art in itself.
It is a bit of a piece of art.
Yeah. I'll try and put a picture up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've got something there I can share with you.
Cool.
But the truck has evolved as our family's evolved.
Yeah.
Because all of it, apart from having a truck that ran on waste vegetable oil and getting into remote places to play our music, apart from that, everything else has been a really organic process, and we've had to build things as we've needed them, or we've had the money to do so.
Mm.
So it's been a pretty interesting journey. Yeah.
So you say the baby's born, you bring the baby back to the truck.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that was all like?
Yeah, I remember. You know, we had our double bed in there, and it's all one room. You know, it's 5 meters by 2 and a bit meters.
Right.
Is our whole house.
And it's amazing what you can do with that when you...
Yeah, it's basically the size of someone's bathroom or a small kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got our double bed, which you roll out of bed and you're in the kitchen, basically.
Yeah.
And I remember Gracie being a baby, and we had one of those hammocks, those bouncy hammocks that hang from the ceiling.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of tech screws in the roof, you know, with the spring and the cloth hammock and Gracie was just, we could just lean out of bed and just put the hand on the hammock and bounce her to sleep.
It was
wonderful. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. It worked really, really well.
Right.
And then we had to build her a bunk when she grew out of that.
Yeah.
And that, if my memory serves me correctly, which is pretty average, she slept where the day bed is now. So yeah, we've got a day bed which is opposite the sink in the truck, and she used to sleep there when she grew out of the hammock. And now we've built her a little room in the back of the cab. So she's now 7, going on 8. So she's got her own little private room now in the back of the cab, which then converts back to seats when we drive.
And the reason for that is because you needed to make room for the fucking twins.
The twins came along, yes. Yes, that's right. So 3 years after Gracie was born, and as you and your fellow guests have realised, that having one kid is quite hard work on the parents. Like, you can't keep up with the little things. She was wearing us out. And so we decided that she needed a brother or sister.
Yeah.
And we started trying to have, you know, our second child. Gracie was about 2 and a half, I think. And we had, Beck fell pregnant, and then we lost that one, which was a pretty hard time, particularly for Beck. Like, she really felt that hard.
Yeah. It's incredibly common, isn't it?
It's really common, you know, when you start talking. And then when you start trying to have a baby and you realize that it's such a miracle just to fall pregnant.
Yeah.
And some people don't even, aren't that lucky to even fall pregnant. Like, it's not easy when you want to have one.
Yeah.
Especially for some people. Anyway, we were lucky and we did fall pregnant. And I remember going to and because she'd had a miscarriage, the doctor, when she fell pregnant, the doctor said, okay, at 7 weeks, I think it was, come in for a scan to make sure that everything's okay. Normally that would be too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in together, and when the doctor dropped the bomb and said there's two in there, it was such a strange feeling of, I'd say half of it was really excited, and then the other half was, fuck.
Quick calculations in your head.
How the fuck are we going to do this? How am I going to do this? How am I going to, you know, the whole primal instinct thing starts kicking in. How am I going to support this family off a measly musician's income?
Yeah.
how are we going to accommodate a family of five in a truck? So I was partly super excited and at the same time just almost devastated because I thought that it was the end. I thought it was the end of my musical
life,
my musical career. I thought I'd have to get a more secure, well-paying job.
Yeah.
I thought we'd have to, you know, move into a normal house. And at this point, it was very clear to me that I could never feel like I could live in a normal house again after living in the truck and enjoying the benefits of being and the freedom of being able to move your house wherever you want to go,
mm-hmm.
and having the freedom of being able to earn your money wherever you go.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that, you know, that far outweighed the challenges of being in a small box.
Yeah.
But when the twins came, I thought there's no conceivable way that we could make this work.
Mm.
And I don't know whether it was laziness or some kind of inner determination that I didn't know that I had.
Some perverse masochism.
some kind of weird energy that I couldn't quite understand. I never did anything about it, and time just played out. And I guess I must have kept telling myself that it was all going to be okay because it always has been.
Yeah.
You know, all the challenges, I kept saying to myself, well, all the things that I've been worried about prior to this moment have always worked out okay.
Yeah.
You know, all the gigs that I was super stressed out about beforehand, you know, getting up in front of thousands of people or whatever, that it always worked out some way or another.
Yeah.
And I am here right now, and so why is it not going to work out? And I just kept telling myself that.
Well, you kind of have to, don't you?
You do.
It's funny. Yeah. I was thinking when you were talking before about how there's lots of differences, but something about parenthood that's different from before for me was that you have conflicting emotions simultaneously a lot.
Right.
Like before, I used to have joy here, then, terror here.
Yeah.
And they were kind of linear.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of it will happen simultaneously, like you were saying about what am I going to do, but also excitement.
Yeah.
Suddenly these seemingly oppositional emotions start happening together, certainly for me, and you can't decide which is, so you just got to keep moving forward.
I reckon that moment that happens at childbirth itself, like that the first moments where you have all these conflicting emotions, all happens at childbirth. Totally. You know, you're in awe of this thing that's just been born.
But now it's my responsibility.
Now you've got all this fear of, you know, and anxiety to do with responsibility, but you've got all this love and you know, there's so much boiling around in that room. You know, when your baby's born.
I was also thinking about the line from Jaws. You know, when he's chumming the water and he sees the shark and he comes back and goes, "We're going to need a bigger boat." That's what I imagine you saying when you heard about the twins. "We're going to need a bigger truck."
Bigger truck, absolutely.
I can't fit this fucking truck. You'll put a second story on the truck.
Yeah.
But what did you – so you've got – so that there's two more kids, so you've just got them.
So we had the twins in – we had them in hammocks as well.
Yeah.
Two hammocks. I'm pretty sure. It's all a blur.
Yeah, man. That's the other thing about parenthood. It's a blur, isn't it? It's a blur. That's why your body – that's why nature tricks you into having more, doesn't it?
Right.
Because you know, as soon as you start – you get into baby mode. Oh, they're great. He was great when he was a kid.
Yeah.
You just blank on all the difficulties.
It blurs it all so you don't remember how hard it is when they're first born.
Yeah.
And the lack of sleep that you get.
It's like I say to people, don't ever, when people, as they get older, are deciding whether to have kids, I'm like, just whatever you do, don't sit down and figure it out on a bit of paper.
Right.
Because it never works on paper.
No.
It's a nightmare.
No.
You put your pros and cons because most of the pros are things you can't properly conceive of until you've got them.
Absolutely.
If you know what I mean. You can only list all the things that are going to be problematic. Or maybe that's a more bloke thing. I don't know. Fuck. Who knows?
But yeah, well, we do try
It's got to be a wild,
yep.
you know.
Absolutely.
You've just got to do it or not.
Yeah. Sort of thing. Absolutely. Yeah. I think you just got to do it, and it's a wonderful thing. You can never go back from it.
Yeah.
So we had the twins in the hammocks, and then they outgrew them, and I had to do a major renovation on the truck because we just, that was, it was either that or, you know,
yeah,
sell the truck and do something completely different. So I thought, well, I better try. So I, by this stage, we've, because in Margaret River, we've got a base camp.
Yeah.
And we stay there for the summers, and we've got a, it's kind of an elaborate docking station, we call it. So the truck, truck backs in, and there's a deck on the back of our truck that opens up.
Yeah.
And that deck matches up with some other decking that I've built. And at this base camp, we've got a couple of sea containers that, that I've also yeah. fitted out as nice little cabins. They're all lined with timber, and it's all really nice and cozy. And so we temporarily, Beck and the twins moved out of the truck when they were quite young. That's right. So Beck and the twins, when they were really young, were in the hammocks. In the sea container, and Bat Gracie and I were in the truck while I was also renovating it.
Yes,
and right. So we had our two separate rooms at that point, which, you know, when the kids were quite, when the babies, twins were quite young. So that's how we sort of managed that little, because otherwise, you know, Gracie and I just weren't going to get any sleep at all.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if we're all in the same box together and the twins are waking up every 2 hours or so to get fed and changed. And so Beck would do the night shift, and then I would, you know, I'd be on catering during the day. You know, I'd feed myself and Beck and trying to fatten her up because she's losing weight quicker than she can put it on, trying to feed two kids at once. She was just getting stripped of everything she had.
Yeah.
And so my main job was on catering and, you know, high protein, high energy food, you know, lots of fatty stuff. So she could make enough milk to feed two kids, two babies. And so she slept in a separate room, and Gracie and I were in the truck. And then I'd try and find time during the day to try and renovate the truck and make some bed space for the twins. And which we did, and so now we've got sort of a four-tiered system. We had a dog at the time, and he was down the bottom.
Yeah.
And then the twins were sleeping in a single bunk, but it was really long, so their feet were touching in the middle. Right. Well, as they grew older, their feet started to touch, but they had a head each end of the bed.
Yeah.
And then our double bed was above that.
Right.
And half of it was all our music gear storage under the bed, and the other half was this single bunk that the twins would sleep toe to toe on. And then Gracie's bunk, and she's the oldest daughter, her bunk was above our feet on a single bunk, so we sort of had this layer of four all on top of one another.
Family storage.
And when it was working well, when everybody slept, it was fantastic because we were all so close to one another. If anybody stirred in the night, we were right there to help and all that sort of stuff. But as soon as someone got sick or there was a cold or something like that, or somebody wasn't sleeping for whatever reason, then we all struggled. Right.
Yeah.
So when it was good, it was great. And when it was bad, it was really hard.
Because it's ship life.
It's the
same as that. You know, we're all in it together.
All in this box, this tiny box together. And it's still like that now. You know, when things are great, it's really great.
Yes, right.
And when there's a cold or a flu or something like that, then it's a really challenging time, and we go into crisis mode, or you know, survival mode, we call it.
Yeah.
You know, and we just get back to the basics, and it's sleep, you know, hygiene and feeding each other.
There's an argument to be made that this is the way we have evolved to operate, you know what I mean? That, you know, to on a simple level like that, like be dealing with like as much as it sounds to me like that could be really stressful and anxiety inducing, the fact that you're having to break life down into very the simplicity of what needs to happen, looking after the clan, looking after the tribe, just doing what needs to be done, that also is what we're evolved to do, as opposed to going away and working jobs in the city and coming home late and doing all this sort of stuff. In a way that, look, I might be totally wrong, but that might also have a counter anxiety. Like when I'm in a crisis, knowing that what my job is really helps. Like if I have to go and do this, this and this,
Yeah.
There's clear thing housekeeping things that need to be done.
Yeah.
Then you're not having to think about all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is that kind of...
Yeah.
Can it work like that?
Yeah. I mean,
God,
that's...
I don't know. That's a...
That's what I love about living, like, confining ourselves to living in a box. Like, it forces you to live in the most simplistic way, because you just can't afford to have all this other stuff. Right. You don't have room for it.
So you have to get to what's important.
So we get to what's crucial. Important very quickly, because there is no space emotionally or physically for other stuff. And that's what I love about it the most, is that it addresses those core primitive needs.
Right.
So blatantly, so clearly, you know,
because the suggestion is that the sort of stress and anxiety epidemic is a lot to do with affluenza and just having just too many decisions, too much stuff, too much complexity, too much connectivity. Yep. So that taking that stuff away and having to sort of evolve an understanding of what is absolutely necessary, there must be some.
Yeah, it's probably the key thing that I love the most.
It could be freeing as well as confining.
It's simplifying, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a massive freeing of headspace, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the bit that I'm trying to understand, because to me, from the outside, my first reaction, now that I've got these two kids of my own, is like, that's just hell on wheels. Because you can't get away and you're all in... But that's because I'm just imagining... us as we are with our life suddenly being squeezed into your life. You get
right,
what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, but I think we could do with that. It might remove a lot of what causes the stress as well. But then, as you say, there's other stresses. You're never going to.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Like that anxiety comes from lack of, like, not lack of, but wanting something other than what you have.
Yeah.
You know, like you wanting to have the freedom to go and write the next play or do the next thing or go on the next tour or wanting something that you don't have in this moment right now. And that's where that anxiety comes from. Mm. And living that really simple way in the truck with our family, like there's basically no, like we get anxious too, of course, but we can't be thinking of too many other things that we want that don't happen right now, because it's just not going to work.
No, you can't do it, so you don't do it.
And
it's such a funny thing, and I wonder how that sits in the your experience, how that sits in the, because you're still living in the regular world.
Yeah.
As well.
I wrestle with that all the time, you know, like, where we are right now, like this very moment in time, Beck and I and the kids, we're up at a place called Cooljamin in Cape Levique, and we're doing three gigs a week up there playing this music residency. But we're also homeschooling the kids, and that takes up so much time.
Mm.
And every morning when I sit down, I go, right, okay, you know, the mornings are dedicated to homeschooling the kids. I have to make sure that before we even start the day's lessons that I'm in the right headspace, and I don't get it right all the time. In fact, more often than not, my brain wants to start longing for something that I can't do, or find a reason why this homeschooling thing is a pain in the ass because I want to be writing more songs, or I just want to go fishing, or I want to go, my friends are coming up and I want to go hang out with them, or...
Mm.
Somebody comes over and offers me this cool opportunity to go out on a boat or do something fun. And no, I can't, because I've got to be here.
Mm.
But if I try to rid all those thoughts out of my brain and just go, right, all I need to do, all I have to do is be a good parent and be at home tutor the kids, and then I can play later.
Yeah.
And all I've got to do is feed them, feed me, homeschool the kids, play this gig, and then that's it. No more.
Yeah.
And as long as I don't have too many things floating around in my head, I can be really present and be a good home tutor. But if I'm sitting there with Gracie, you know, going through some maths problem with her, thinking about and my mind is somewhere else, then I feel like this is a pain in the ass.
And that's where the anxiety is.
And then I get anxious and stressed.
Because you're not, you're resisting
you're not in the moment
you're in.
Yeah.
And no one can be totally present all the time, but yeah, that's where the pain comes from, the suffering comes from when, but in those brief moments for me, in the brief moments where I'm actually just doing something simple with the kids and I'm able to recognize it and appreciate it, it's great.
It's awesome. Yeah.
But if I'm in, you know, this constantly comes back.
It constantly comes up, doesn't it? On a daily basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I reckon it's a really hard thing, but it's also a blessing.
Yeah.
Like it's a teaching.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's the greatest thing about being a dad is the teaching and the personal development that it and the opportunity that it is to better yourself as a person because of the challenges we face that we have to move through because you have to. You have to try to move through these challenges. Otherwise, you're not being the dad you could be or the person you could be or you're doing your child a disservice by not being the person that you could be.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about what you guys are doing too. We've been talking, Richard and I are talking about modelling behaviour.
Yeah.
You know, modelling, you guys mustn't talk a lot, negotiate a lot, figure things out a lot, and you're modelling that to them. I mean, because you're in such close quarters and,
they see everything.
To streamline, they see everything. You also can't have any excess stuff, so you've got to kind of deal with stuff as it comes up. You don't have the luxury to just kind of
put it away literally for another time.
Sweep things under the carpet or metaphorically.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
sure.
So they see that. They see you guys playing music. They see you doing what you want to do, you're passionate about.
Yeah, yeah.
And that there's alternative ways to live.
Yeah, that's a big one.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And they know that already. Yeah, they're pretty clear with that. That we live a pretty alternative life to most people.
That's an extraordinary thing because it's very easy to sit at wherever you are in your life and dream about other people's lives. I can, you know, someone who works a million hours a day in the city and goes home to their family late at night might dream of traveling up and down the West Coast in a truck like you guys do and playing music and doing all that.
Yeah.
And it's not without its own difficulties and complexities. But the point is they can do it.
Yeah.
We all can. Nothing's physically stopping us.
It's the choice, yeah. It's making that choice.
Series of choices.
Absolutely.
You started by going across the Nullarbor in the truck that led to this.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and Beck never used to, she used to be a campfire musician, you know, and now she's playing four gigs a week.
Yeah, right.
With me. And she's only now just calling herself a professional musician.
Yeah. Because you guys play your own material separately and together, like you've got records together, right?
We've got one that we've managed to do together,
right?
Which was a small miracle finding the time to record an album, and write the songs. That was the hardest thing.
Well, you've got a recording studio in a container as well, don't you?
Yeah, a little sea container. Yeah, which we don't use it enough for our own purposes, but That's the lingering thing that's always around us. It's like trying to make time to write songs and get in the studio, the two of us. You know, because for the two of us to do that, we need to get a third, you know, someone else to come and look after the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's quite difficult
and how
with
have
all
you,
the different needs to make that happen.
The other thing that we always come back to is the importance of your relationship with your partner, you know, because especially I found after the second one, it was easy to lose each other in that because when you've got one, you can have time off and it's just a whole, like I feel like two was such a massive step.
It's a big leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then we really had to consciously start to see each other and try and how the fuck do you do that in your situation?
Yeah, well, it doesn't
happen. You're always together, but.
Yeah.
You've got to.
It doesn't happen unless we actually book it in with each other or the calendar. We have a shared calendar. If we don't book it in, it just doesn't happen. You know, time gets chewed up with the needs of the kids, you know, making food or homeschooling or, you know, because we're around each other 24/7. You know, we see a lot of each other.
Mm.
And it's, It's the best and the hardest thing, I reckon, being in each other's face the
See,
whole
there's
time.
There's those conflicting things again. Simultaneously.
So the hard work for us is carving out the time for self-care so that we don't turn into these devilish people that, you know, if we don't get our own time to ourselves to just defrag, you know, then we start being nasty people to each other, you know, and that's something that every family, I would imagine, experiences. But so we have to really make sure we get our self-care time. We do it every morning. We alternate. So I'll go one morning and I like to go for a run along the beach or whatever, just have a little meditation or whatever, just focus on gratitude.
Yeah.
Just sit there and breathe and just focus on what's great.
You got to
constantly
that,
choose that.
And we live in a media cycle that won't let you do that either. At least you're off the grid with that
Well,
shit.
We totally choose to not buy into any media whatsoever. Like we don't watch the news. We don't even really spend that much time on Facebook.
You can't watch the news, especially as a parent.
It's just
because you've got that
negative
sensitivity now to the you know, to suffering of people that comes weirdly. Well, it makes sense when you have kids too. And the media news cycles are just so appalling.
It's
in
horrible.
There. It's all
horrible.
You hear about when there are good things happening as
There's
well.
There's some great things. There's some really great things. There's just as many great things happening in the world as there is bad.
Yeah.
You only hear about the bad stuff because that's what sells. But anyway, that's another.
And that is when you're already, so if you're struggling with the kids and seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, if there's hard periods, all you need to do is click on one story, news story that's just diabolical, and it can ruin your day. It certainly does for me. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I don't do it.
Just got to stop myself, even if there's a temptation to check out something. No.
Yeah, it's so tempting,
there.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like it's,
can't go there. So that's good.
So we carve out time for ourselves first and foremost so that our love tank's topped up. And then we also need to carve out time for us together.
Yes.
And once our love tanks are topped up, we can then come together and nurture that fire that started the whole thing in the first place.
Right.
And if that fire starts to fade, then everything fades and then it's just everything just falls apart.
So I wonder if narrative is important then, because I'm finding that with Missy. Luckily, we have a strong origin story,
right?
A very specific kind of we got together in a certain way, and we tell the story to the kids and to us a lot. Well, I mean, in our case, it's been she's told 70,000 audiences,
through her songs.
Talking about how she wrote this song about us meeting in Broome or whatever.
We've
got a strong sense of our relationship narrative, how we met, why we met, what our values were, what pulled us together. And something about telling the kids that and talking about that, and then they came along and integrating that.
Yeah.
There's this ongoing narrative of our lives. And it's easier to do when you've got a really obvious, like, we met in Broome at Richard's wedding and we played a duet together. It's all very like that. But you guys had the truck narrative. You met very quickly, travelled across the Nullarbor, this gradual exploration of what you'd need to live on a truck and have a family. That's a strong narrative that you can lean on in hard times too.
Yeah. And like you guys, like we find ourselves telling that narrative to because we're, also performers too.
Yeah.
We find ourselves meeting a lot of people as well and they're quite often intrigued with the story, which comes out in our performances because we've got a lot of songs about it all as well. So we're kind of documenting our story in the form of songs and then when we introduce them.
Yeah.
And then, people come up inevitably after the gig or in between sets and they want to talk about the truck or they want to talk about veggie oil or they want to talk about homeschooling kids or just the whole package in itself. It's a different story. So it can be interesting to some people. And so we find ourselves telling that story a lot, which is great because it keeps it fresh. And then, as life goes on, that narrative keeps continuing and changing into what it's changing into. And
do you find you get a boost of gratitude with that? Because I when I see people I haven't seen for a while, they say, what have you been doing? And then I tell people what I've been doing and I hear myself saying all these amazing things I've had the opportunity to do.
Yeah.
Where, and I go, wow, actually I should be that sound, because I see the look on their face, they go, that yeah. sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And I yeah. go, oh, yeah. And I have to go, fuck, you're a miserable asshole. Like you only, you know, you focus on the stresses, and then when you hear your narrative or you yeah. see the response to it, you go, you suddenly are able to see these positive things that because of the way they respond yeah. to it. I'm terrible like that. I've got to get that gratitude and remember what how privileged and lucky I am, you know.
Well, I think that's
it's yeah. easy to not do that.
And I think that's one of the addictions to performing, whatever yeah. your art form is, like having that telling you that story over and over to new people and having that reflected back to you
yeah.
helps to keep it grounded and real in a sense, even yeah. though, you know, you could quite easily start to get a little bit of an inflated ego sometimes by sure. the constant barrage of people telling you this or that.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other ball game, really keeping that in check.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is great at the same time to, you know, left to your own devices, and if you weren't playing and you were just not telling your narrative all the time, then you'd forget about it and you would lose its nostalgia and
yeah.
and it would just become just another part of you that is not so interesting anymore.
Mm. And we're a storytelling species, aren't we? Like our yeah. whole way of grappling with the world is about story. Our personal story, the stories you tell yourself to get through, the
yeah.
song stories, you know, indigenous cultures, literally, you know, like song yeah. lines and stories that ground you and propel you forward and allow you to see the past and see where you are on this continuum.
Yeah.
And this sort of thing.
And it's a constant dance, isn't it, between not getting caught up in your own story,
mm.
but also listening to other people's stories and comparing yours to theirs.
Mm.
And there's this constant dance to sort of keep it in check, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And let it sort of cross over with other people's stories. And
yeah. yeah.
And that's
and be inspired by their story and yeah. you inspiring their story. And
we've lost a little bit of that in generally in the world because all of our story, I think, happens on TV and movies. It's like external sure. entertainment story, where in the past, before all the technology and all the of TV and film and stuff, story came to you via literally people telling you stories yeah. or singing songs or, you know, like, you know, in the old days, like, I just know with my Irish family, the you know, everyone's got a story that they have to tell
yeah.
like or a song. What's your song? You know, you're going to – if you're in the pub and someone says, right, it's your turn, then you've got a stock story or song that you tell
yeah.
or you sing. And people don't have that as much anymore.
No.
But there's something lovely about that because
oh, it's magic. There. It's a magic thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I reckon it really, it's a great interconnection that happens, you know, when those stories are told and shared.
Yeah. yeah.
And mutually shared, you know, if everybody has a turn, then it's that's great. Right.
Because you know one person, it's not like there's an audience here and a performer there.
No yeah, it's got to be a two-way street.
Yeah, yeah.
For it to work.
Yeah, we share, well, it's at least in the past and traditionally sure. we were all on the same level with that.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't the sort of passive audience thing was, it's funny. I remember being able to tell people who watched a lot of TV from the stage.
Right.
Or people that weren't savvy to perform. Because say you're doing comedy, there'd always be a few people in the crowd who'd be like just stony faced,
yeah.
not laughing. And they'd come up to the end of the show and say, that was so funny. Yeah, well, why the fuck were you sitting there? kind of, and I think it's because they haven't learnt to be an audience,
sure.
that, which I extrapolate to just having spent a lot of time in front of, as a passive audience member, in front of a TV or a, you know, rather than hear responding in real time to people's stories or to whatever.
Yeah.
So it's happening internally, but they've evolved away from having to show it because it's a one-way street.
Yeah, and you
whereas other people will be all animated and they're smiling at you and they're leaning forward and they're, you know,
all that. Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. We see that a lot, you know, yeah. in the music scene too, playing these gigs and, you know, sometimes you feel like you may as well be a pot plant in the corner,
yeah.
you know. And you feel like you're playing to no one
yeah.
or just straight through them to.
Yeah.
But every now and then there's, well, quite often actually there's, well, yeah, and the strange thing is, yeah, like that. And those strange, yeah. those same people will come up to you at the end of the gig. Oh, that was great and fantastic. Yeah. Well, it's like, well, why didn't you show some yeah. kind of It's got to be that
they just don't know that they've never or they haven't had much experience of storytelling slash entertainment being a two-way street, you know. And I suppose for me as a performer, I know how I want it. So when I'm in an audience, I'm really sort of active. I'm trying to get their eye and I'm trying to go, come on, I'm trying to lift them up with it, you know, which can be exhausting in itself.
Sure is.
So your kids are going to like
Does
that mean they're going to cart you around in a truck when you're in your old age?
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that something like that happens. I don't know. They do sort of talk about, I mean, they're only young. They're only young, but they do sort of talk about, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to get a red truck or, you know, or a fire truck or.
They think in terms of truck. Their world is trucks, is their houses on trucks.
But yeah, I mean, but we're in a bit of a transition, hopefully, at the moment. Our family, we're sort of, I've developed a bit of a love of sailing. And so we're going to try and try part of our year on the water. And so you never know, our kids might become sailors or they might become truckies or they might just go completely the other way and go, you know what, I've spent all my childhood in a box. I want to have a normal house, have a stable life. I want to grow a veggie garden.
Yeah.
You know, they might just rebel completely the opposite way.
It's Alex from Family Ties Syndrome. Do you remember Family Ties? It was like a hippie parents and their son's like a really conservative accountant. And he wears a suit to school. And it's like this opposition where, you know, if you're hippies, your kids are going to be accountants.
I can't see it happening at this point, but, I wouldn't blame them if they did sort of just go, you know what, I just want to live in the city and
have they might dabble in job. It for a while and then come to their senses.
Of course, I think they will. Inevitably dabble.
And I suppose with the boat, you could just take the box off the back of the truck.
Yeah, it's a natural dump it in a hull. It's a natural progression, really. Like we're living in a land yacht, you know. Like it's tiny.
We're at sea.
I guess the difference is that, you know, we can get off this boat and run around in a park easily, but when you're on a boat, you know, the only thing you can do is swim.
Yeah.
And up here in the Kimberley, it's not advised with all the crocs around.
No, that's true. So it's another level of isolation.
Yeah.
You're right. If you at least, it's funny the desert ocean parallel up here, isn't it? Because you can be driving up and down the west coast and there's this just vast desert.
Yeah.
And then the ocean as well. And
they're
both kind of flip sides of the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty similar.
So we're going to give that a go. That's the next chapter for us is to try. And see how we go floating as a family. And because for me, like, and Beck, we've got this passion of, you know, living a light footprint and living simply. And, you know, to me it's a natural progression to go from veggie oil to sail power, you know.
Yeah.
Less moving parts and we don't have to collect oil and it doesn't burn anything.
Yeah, sure.
And there's other costs involved, but at least, you know, to move from A to B, we can just go by the wind.
Yeah.
And so it's just one less thing to fix.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just like the feeling of it. It's just a great feeling to be able to get pushed along by the wind.
Yeah.
But as for how we're going to be able to do it as a family and playing music while we're doing that is going to be a bit of a challenge. I haven't quite figured out yet.
Sure.
And I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And
so you could float around island places where, you know, go for to tourist resorts maybe. Is there somewhere in Indonesia where you could drop off? Though the money wouldn't be as good in terms of.
There's plenty of places. As for whether the quality of the gigs that we'll be able to do will be as nice, you know, because, you know, No offense to anybody out there, but sometimes yacht clubs can be a little bit of a snotty kind of a place, snobby kind of clientele.
Yeah,
but having said that, there's just as many, you know, really down to earth, places sailors out there and yacht clubs as there is the polo shirts and deck shoes type yacht clubs.
Yeah, and you know a lot of the fathers talk about. We've talked about the importance of just being around It's not even about the quality of the time you spend. You don't have to make it all count. And it is if you don't see them very much.
Mm.
But I suppose that for you at least, that's not a problem. You're there. You're always around.
Yeah.
You're spending time.
Yeah.
And you're all together all the time.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, we may as well be in a nice place while we're around each other all the time.
Yeah. It's possible to do anything. This is the beauty of Western Australia that I discovered when I first came over here. It just really feels like anything's possible. Right. And maybe I met the right people at the right time too, but I don't know.
I think there's something special about this particular place too, the Kimberley. Like, it seems to be, like, there's a lot of people that are doing things a bit differently up here.
Yeah.
And doing what they want to do and making it work somehow.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, you somehow make it work. I think intention counts a lot up here for...
They say this place is an amplifier of, you know, for those intentions. Like, if whatever your intentions are, they say that the energy of this place is, it just blows it up into big things. Or if you're in a bit of a dark space, it can be a really dark place.
Oh, that's why you can see people here at very different, you know.
Yeah.
And you may not be of your choosing. Either you may not have a choice, you know.
Mm.
There's certainly a lot of when I was up here the first time drinking and stuff. There's people who are kind of ending their story here as well, you know.
Right.
Like, yeah. Like if you haven't got it together, it can be really rough.
Right.
And you can't go anywhere. You're at the edge of the country. Can't run any further.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And but if you want to get it to, you know, if you want to change that, it's also incredibly possible too.
Yeah, and least, powerful.
Yeah, yeah. It's
so did you find, like, I'm not that familiar with your journey, but so you were here in a bit of a dark place, you know, drinking a lot and things like that. Did you decide in your mind that you were going to change that here, or was it somewhere else?
Well, I'd been to Broome in the past and I always loved it. I've said this before, but it goes back to Malcolm Douglas because he used to live here. I used to see those docos when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Broome now.
Yeah.
And so I always thought of it as a romantic place. I came here in my 20s, basically trying to outrun my problems. I went to Perth and nothing changed because I eventually have to move somewhere else. Came to Broome.
Yeah.
I escaped in the middle of the night on a Greyhound bus because I knew it was only a matter, you know, the police were starting to know me too well and stuff like that. And I thought, you know what, I've got to leave. I knew by then well enough when to get out before.
Yeah.
Not that I would do anything really bad. I'd just burn bridges and it would just turn to shit one way or another. So I'd get out. So then I'd go to bloody Darwin or Catherine or somewhere like that. I did what the Alkies called geographicals.
Right.
And we're famous for that. You know, you go, you think if you change the place, you change everything apart from the booze and everything will be different and it's not.
It's a new thing.
But then I just, in desperation, someone said to me, come to Broome. And I went, right, I'm out. And I came here and then everything changed.
Yeah.
10 years ago, just changed everything.
Yeah.
Extraordinary, which is what people said happens, which was the freakiest thing. So I wonder if that's an
amplifier thing, like, because you came here with a changed attitude, maybe.
Yeah, I expected it. And it just amplified that. And I know this is not going to be the case for everyone, and it's, you know, there's a lot of luck and there's a lot of whatever, but I came here, I entered the place believing that it had magical powers.
Right.
And also ready to change.
Yeah.
And committed to, I remember going, the only thing I haven't tried is helping other people, being part of a community.
Wow.
And so I came here and went, well, I'm going to try to give something back. I'm going to try and make myself available and get to, you know what I mean? Not just.
What's that Buddhist saying about happiness and giving back? It's like.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's like the pinnacle of happiness is to give.
Yeah.
Something like
it's,
that.
It's, you know, how much you give is proportionate to what you.
To your happiness.
What your happiness is. Yeah. And that sort of changed everything for me. And the weird thing about Broome was that people would say, I'd say, hey, like a bit sort of feeling a bit foolish and embarrassed, I'd say, this really weird thing happened, right? I decided I wanted to experience something and then 2 days later it just fell in my lap. So I wanted to be a playwright you know, the next day someone puts a sign up in the thing saying, looking for playwrights, we'll teach you how to be one. There's a number of things like that, down to meeting Missy and all these things that happened. And I'd say to people, hey, just embarrassed and whispering this thing, and they go, oh, yeah, that's just Broome. And I go, what? Yeah. I was expecting them to be thinking I was a dreadful hippie and seeing stuff
that there
was
nothing.
And they just go, oh, no, that's it. That's the thing. That's what happens. I'm like, what? Because I'm a very reluctant kind of, I'm spiritual in my own way, but I'm not very woo-woo, you know what I mean? I'm not easily convinced of stuff. But Broome fucks with your...
It does.
...thing because...
Well, I don't know if it's Broome or a top-end thing, but it's definitely true for us too. Like Beck had a song called Already Dancing, and it was a song that she wrote about meeting me before she'd even met me.
Right.
And she wrote this song, she sang it, and then all of a sudden, you know, she's manifested, you know, her fella in the song. And the similar thing has happened to us. You know, we don't make a lot of money, but somehow or other we've manifested this boat that we bought.
Right, yeah.
Which is not an expensive one by any means, but it's a boat, and it's something that we could try to live on, and it's because we wrote a song about it.
Yeah. Well, look, you're visual. I mean, you have to visualize something before you can find it.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, if you want to just be totally practical about it, you need to be on the lookout. But then maybe it's also something to do with space. There's just a lot of space in the West and the top. There's a lot of there's the country is very present, and so that pulls you out. Your gaze, also inward. God, I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, but it also doesn't work for everyone.
Quantum physics-y now, isn't it?
But it doesn't necessarily work for everyone, you know. Like, I know, but I think that's the amplifying thing too, because most people either rave about Broome when I meet them in Melbourne, they're like, oh, or they're like, that's a shithole, man. I hated it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it really, there's a real, and I think it might be the amplification thing, where you're at the time. I don't know.
Yeah, but I've heard a few people talk about the amplifier thing. The one I remember being Quickie. Have you had Greg Quick on?
Yeah.
He talks about this place being an amplifier.
Right.
And, you know, and he talks about it in his Quickie way. You know, he brings stars and makes it all magical. Makes it sound pretty woo-woo and awesome.
Yes, that's right.
But that's where I first heard it from him. And ever since hearing that, I've like, wow, yeah, okay. And Will's got some stories too. You know, the fellow whose house we're in right now, he's got some pretty interesting stories about when he first came to Broome and how it picked him up and spat him out and said, don't come back here again.
Right.
He had a bit of a hard journey, you know, coming here, being initiated into Broome.
Yeah.
And he's worked through that. And now he's, you know, going well.
He's in here. Yeah, it's a weird thing. But, at least our kids are... We're able to try and show them some of it too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Cool, Dan.
There we are. Thanks, Dave.
I need a wee.
Excellent. I'm never very good at closing these things.
That's
all. Just say goodnight,
folks. Just to say goodnight, folks.
See you later.
Thanks for listening.
All right. See you.
Awesome Podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.